This morning, if you would like to turn to Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14. We're going to talk this morning about counting the cost. I don't know if in your life what sort of things that you have to, on the front end of, really think about what the cost is going to be. And Jesus is going to tell a story in a moment about that. I was thinking about it yesterday because I was in the casino over in Florence. And before you chew me out of here this morning, I mentioned in the adult Bible class, I went over to try out for Wheel of Fortune in the casino in Florence because that's where they held the tryouts. And I like watching that show. I'm usually pretty good with the puzzles, and I thought it'd be fun to get on there and win something. And so I went over for the tryouts, and because they're hosting at the casino, I'm sure part of their deal with the casino is they're going to run you through the whole thing so you can see everything on your way in and all the shiny lights and buzzers that you need to do on your way out with your money, because the casino would like to see you spend some money there. And as I walked through, I was thinking about all these folks and what their stories may be. And it's not a sermon on gambling this morning, so don't get too nervous. But I was thinking about, you know, what is the story of all these people? What brings them here today? Who of them can afford to be here today? Who of them are spending money that they really probably don't have, that they need for other things, in the hopes of something big happening? And I was thinking about what we would be talking about this morning, the idea of counting the cost. And for us, it may be any number of things. It could be the cars we drive. It could be the homes that we live in. But each of us, when something big comes along, has to count the cost, has to figure out what the expense is going to be and if that's something that we can handle. And in our country, this is not something we're very good at, because if you read anything about credit card debt in our country right now, clearly we're not counting the cost. We're actually looking at the credit limit and seeing what we can pull off, and then not thinking much about how long it will take to pay for that. Large crowds, in Luke chapter 14 and verse 25, were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple." Family. Now, I struggle sometimes when I read the verse we just read, because generally speaking, when it comes to Christianity and church life, we encourage family. The church is family, and then beyond that, we try to do things to help strengthen families. Last year at our VBS, I sent a survey out after the VBS asking people that visited, if you were looking for a church, what kind of things would you want to see taught about? What kind of Bible classes would you like to see? And there were a lot of the standard Bible answers or just textual things and stuff. But one of the resounding themes that kept coming back was family. Stuff about marriage, stuff about what it is to how to parent, stuff about if you're an adult and your kids have gone off and given up on church, how do you deal with the hurt that comes with that? All kinds of different things about family. And when you read this verse at first, the idea of if anyone just comes to me and doesn't hate all these family, we don't like hate and family lumped in the same sentence. And we may struggle as we begin to look at this. Jesus is not telling us to dislike our families. Jesus is not telling us to treat our families in the way that we might define hate nowadays. What Jesus is telling us is we can have a lot of excuses to not follow. There are a lot of reasons we can come up with to not really let this life that Jesus has put before us take root in our own lives. And for a lot of folks, one of the first places they begin with that is family. And for any number of reasons. I have known lots of folks that have struggled with the idea of being baptized and the idea that that's important and that it matters, because they know that great-grandma whoever was not baptized. And in their minds, then, if I say that it's important to be baptized, and I know that great-grandma whoever was not baptized, then I'm condemning that person. And they start there to struggle with the idea of family. We might struggle with family because some of us here this morning are here while members of our family are not. And they have chosen to do something else today and most Sundays. And for some, that is the life that is led. And we may struggle a little bit there with the idea of family because, like it or not, that's more difficult than if either all of us are here or all of us are not here. If we're all together in one direction or another, it tends to make things a little bit easier. We may struggle with family because someone in our family is telling us that what we're doing is crazy. I had an uncle who was a neurosurgeon, one of the smartest people I know, and he did not believe in God. And I would try to have conversations with him about it, and I couldn't convince him, couldn't make him understand where I was coming from. And he really just thought that I was killing time on Sundays. Hard to get through sometimes with family. And Jesus says, you know, your family can get in the way of this. And so if you're not willing to set that aside, if that is what is necessary, then you can't really follow. Now, what do we do with that as people? Is this now our excuse to abandon family that has bothered us and we don't want anything to do with? Or is this now a reason to try to unify a family that is all following Christ? And I think Jesus clearly would push us in that direction. You look at the writings of Paul and what he has to say about the marriage relationship and the parent-child relationship. Clearly, he wants our families to be families that follow him. But they also can't be something that stands in the way. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Their cross. Now, we as Christians sometimes can take this in a direction that is not intended, which is we make this appear as some great burden that we are carrying. This, I am fighting the difficult Christian fight here in Eugene, Oregon. It's so hard to do, and look at how great I am. And it's not what we're talking about here. It's not that Christianity necessarily needs to be a burden. Now, there are times where it is difficult, but I'll tell you, there are a lot of times where it's great. A lot of times where it makes life a whole lot easier, a whole lot better, a whole lot less lonely. Are we willing to carry our cross? And in Jesus' mind, as he says, are we willing to carry our cross? Think about where he's heading in the next several chapters of this book. He is gradually making his way toward Jerusalem, where he is literally going to carry a cross to his own very, very unpleasant death. He understands what it is to carry something that would not be your first choice. He understands what it is to carry something that is incredibly difficult. And for us, sometimes in the Christian walk, that is what we do. Sometimes it is tough to be a Christian. Sometimes it is tough to not fit in with the crowd. Sometimes this could actually lead people to their death. And we don't see a whole lot of that in our country, praise God. But around the world, there are stories of it all the time. And you can read about martyrs online and the way they give their lives for Christ. Sometimes this does become a literal cross for people, but for most of us, it is just the understanding that, one, family is not always going to be on your side of this, and you have to decide, then what are you going to do? And two, not always going to be easy. Sometimes it's going to be difficult. He continues on. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. We're going to build one right out here sometime. We're not into a lot of tower building nowadays, but we might want to build something. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? The Mosleys have our old dog, Husker. And you might see them post about Husker. Husker's out camping, I think, this weekend over near the beach. We moved into an apartment when we got here to Eugene, realized very quickly Husker was not an apartment dog. And the Mosleys were kind enough to take her in, and she has flourished at the Mosleys' place. She loves herding their goats. She loves running around on the farm. She is 10 times the dog she ever was in our lives. And it's fun to watch what she has become and what she does. Husker, when we first got her, we tried to figure out, what are we going to do with her? We had this backyard, and she loved running around back there, but what about when we're at work? Is she going to stay inside? Are we going to trust that she's not going to destroy our house because she likes to do that? Are we going to have a shelter of some kind for her outside? And I got out of all the tools, and I found online a plan for building a doghouse. And so I sat down and figured out all the materials I would need, and I went down to Lowe's. We didn't have Jerry's there. Went down to Lowe's, and I looked around and figured out what it was all going to cost and what kind of time it was going to take to do, and decided that it was worth the money to do this, and bought the stuff and started to build the doghouse. It was probably the best thing I've ever built in my life. So excited about it. It looked just like Snoopy's doghouse. And it had roof tiles and all that kind of stuff on it. The dog loved it. The dog would hang out at it with her little chin just hanging out over the edge. I had the perfect little doghouse hole. And I thought, you know, in building this, I had to decide a lot of things. Do I have the skills required to do this, which was questionable at the time? Do I have the money it's going to take to do this? Do I have the time it's going to take to do this? I have to count all these costs. Here in Eugene, I will look at houses and I will think, I can't afford that. Could I build a house? What would that cost to do? Each of us has to decide the cost of what is ahead of us. We have to estimate. And the thing about an estimate is, and if you've ever built anything, you understand this, not always exact, is it? And we at the beginning of this Christian walk might have some idea of what is life as a Christian going to look like? What is it going to be? Where is it going to take me? What kind of people is it going to put into my lives? And you may have made some sort of estimate about all that early on. And if you've been a Christian for a very long time, you could probably look back at it at this point and say, that estimate was not exactly what I thought it was going to be. Things turned out very differently than I had in mind. For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and was not able to finish. You will be ridiculed. And there are a lot of people that start this walk, that start this life of Christianity, and then somewhere along the way, just fall off the wayside. Maybe it's too difficult, more so than they thought it was going to be. Maybe it leads them to places they don't want to go. Maybe it family becomes an issue. Maybe somebody at church said something stupid. We never do that. Any number of reasons, people decide to walk away, and they never complete that tower. And in my mind, that always brings to mind this. If you're not familiar with this house, this is Longwood in Natchez, Mississippi. It is one of the last of the old southern plantations to be built. Mr. Nutt, who built this house, began in 1859 planning to build. He built this house. It was patterned after an Asian home that he had seen somewhere. It is majestic if you see it from the outside. It's huge. You can't quite appreciate the scale of it in the picture. It is known as Longwood, but it's also known by another name, and that is Nutt's Folly. Because Mr. Nutt planned to build this thing in 1859, and they designed it and they laid it out, and in early 1861 they built, and then the Civil War broke out. And all of the workers left, and they left their tools and their materials exactly where they were sitting. And if you go to Natchez, Mississippi and visit this house today, they're still sitting there 150 years later. All the stuff just right where it was. There are 32 or 3 rooms in the house. 9 of them are complete. They're all in the basement. That's where the family lived. And so if you go in the basement, you will find a Civil War era plantation home. If you go in any other part of the house, you will find construction underway that's never been finished. And people looked at that thing and they laughed and they laughed, because here is this incredibly wealthy cotton guy who everything is going to change for him in the way that cotton is brought about because of what happens in the Civil War. And then when that war is over, he is never able to recover financially and never able to finish this big house. Which is why Jesus tells us in this parable, count the cost. Now for Mr. Nutt, I would imagine the last thing on his mind was, this country in the next year is going to erupt into civil war. Who would have thought? And as divided as people were, I don't think anybody would have ever assumed that's the route the thing would go, but the next thing you know, there they are, and his house is never going to be finished. For each of us, as we enter into this walk with Christ, it's going to take us in places we wouldn't have expected, probably. And part of that counting the cost is the understanding that regardless of where this leads me, I am going to stay with it. And I'm going to tell you something, that is not always easy. Regardless if this takes me to a place far away, I'm going to stay with it. Regardless if this takes me to a place where a lot of my family doesn't agree with me anymore, I'm going to stay with it. Regardless if this takes me to a place where someone in church has done me wrong and I want to walk away, but I don't walk away because as much as there's a layer of church that's about other people, there's also a pretty big layer of church that's about God. And God is not the one who has done you wrong. And you quite possibly might do someone else wrong along the way, and hopefully they won't leave either. We have to count the cost. And so the beginning of counting this cost is understanding that something unexpected is going to come along, and we have to keep on keeping on. This is home ownership in a lot of ways. One thing I learned after we moved from a house owned by the church there in Arkansas to a house owned by us there in Arkansas is that when the air conditioner stops working, which matters more in Arkansas than it does here, you don't just leave the house and walk away. Nope, no more air conditioning, gotta go. You now have to fix an air conditioner or replace it because it's your house. Something breaks on your car, for the most part, unless your car is not worth a whole lot, you don't just leave it by the side of the road, walk home, and never go look at it again. Get somebody to tow it, figure out what's wrong with it, what it's going to cost to fix. You weigh in your mind, do I fix this, do I replace it, what do I do? Being part of the body is a lot like that in a lot of ways. We have to realize that we do the things we need to do to fix and keep moving. We do the things we need to do to make things better and to move along. And sometimes that means difficult conversations. Sometimes that means things rolling off our backs when we don't want to let them roll off our backs. Sometimes that means everything not being necessarily the way I would want it to be. It's any number of ways when it comes to church life, but this journey that we are on with God is not one that's always going to be easy. It's not one that's always going to be difficult. But most of all, it's occasionally going to throw you some curves. And Jesus would say, get ready for that. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? There will be battles that come along. And we have to look at that battle and figure out what is the best way to win this battle. Now, I am not a military guy. I appreciate the military a great deal. I'm very thankful for them, but I've never served in the military. The closest I've gotten to the military is the game of Risk. And if you don't know the game of Risk, it's one of my very favorites. The game of Risk is a game, it says on the cover, of world domination. And you have a map of the world there, and you have all these little armies that you place, and you roll dice to decide who wins and who loses. And I have found in the game of Risk, and I've played most of my games of Risk with teenagers who have been in my youth groups over the course of time, that I can figure out pretty early how their strategy works. And there was a guy in our youth group named Cody, and Cody loved to play Risk, but I knew his weakness. And I knew what he would attempt to do, and I would just, sometimes when we would play Risk, decide, I don't care if I win or lose today, I'm going to thwart Cody. And so I'm going to do things in this game that are going to make sure that Cody does not win, just because I want to see Cody's reaction today. Love that game. My wife, by the way, has never lost. She's more strategic than I am. In that game of Risk, you figure out how people work. You figure out what strategies they use. You figure out which battles are winnable, which battles are not winnable. You size it all up. And God would say to us here, Jesus says, like any good commander, you look at the battle before you and you decide, is this a winnable battle? And if it's not, why is it not? Or things I can do to change it. And if it is, then I'm going to go in with confidence and attempt to win this battle. And we will run into lots of things in life that seem very unwinnable. And we have to step back and figure out, well, why is that? We learned in Bible class this morning that when Jesus sent out 72 or 70, depending on the version of scripture you have, he sent them out in pairs. Why? Because it's easier to do life when you're not by yourself. Not to say we can't be single and go through life, but it's easier to do life when there's a church family there. It's easier to spread this word of God around our community when it's not just you alone trying to do it, but when there are many of us trying to do it. And in these battles that we face, we look ahead at these battles and figure out what is the way to win this battle. If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off, and he will ask for terms of peace. He understands that sometimes fighting is not the answer. Ever get in an argument, very likely with your spouse, and realize midway through there is no winning this argument? And then you have a decision to make? Do I keep going just because I enjoy the debate here? Or do I give up? Or what's the right way to go here? Some battles are not worth the battle. And part of the assessing of the cost here is understanding what is worthwhile. And Jesus would tell us this Christian walk is what is worthwhile. Excuse me. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. Cannot. Those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. So what does he mean? What does he mean? Because I don't know how many of us who are here this morning, myself included, have given up everything that we have. To the best of my knowledge, I hope when I leave here, my car is still waiting outside for me, and I will get in that car and I will drive home. I haven't given up my car yet. There's still money in my bank account, although I give some of it. Still a lot of things I've not given up entirely. So what does he mean when he says, give up everything you have? Does he mean we have to give it all up, sleep on the streets? Or does he mean here that we can't let anything stand between us and him? And if that means giving something up, then give it up. If that means finding ways to use that for him, then find ways to use that for him. And I will tell you, whatever thing stands between you in this that you think cannot be changed, cannot be adapted, it can. Or it can be given up. I don't know if it's sports for you with your kids. I don't know if it is money for you. I don't know if it is stuff. I don't know if it is your job. Excuse me. But for a lot of us, there are things that stand between us and fully following God. I had a group of kids my very first year of youth ministry that were all involved in football and cheerleading. I figured out my second year that on the local high school football team, if I went on a Friday night, I would see doing something there that night 21 kids in my youth group that were either playing football, cheerleading, in the band, one of those three. When summertime rolled around, we went on a mission trip, and the football team, they did 7-on-7s during the summer, which is like a kind of a watered-down version of football where it's lots of receivers and runners and quarterbacks and things like that where they practiced. And a lot of them thought, we can't do the mission trip because we've got 7-on-7s that we have to do, and the coach demands that we be there. The quarterback of the team, a guy named Caleb, decided the mission trip was important. Two of his best wide receivers on that team decided the mission trip was important, and they got together, and the next thing I know, I've got 12 of them signed up to go on the summer mission trip. And I thought to myself, I'm going to have a conversation with the coach here at some point, because he's not going to be happy about it. And what I found out about the coach was, the coach was actually kind of impressed that they walked into his office and said, we have a mission trip we need to go on. Is it okay if we miss a week of 7-on-7s? And the coach said, go on. And we had this big group of football players on our mission trip that I can't tell you how many times I've heard in the course of time, can't miss practice, can't miss a game, can't miss this competition, can't miss whatever it is. And they decided, can't miss the mission trip. If there is something out there that is holding you back from following God fully, and in your mind you're saying, we can't miss this, you won't miss it. And believe me, when you choose God above those other things, you won't miss them. Now, that's not to say you can't do both. It can be done. Those guys came back the next weekend, played in another 7-on-7 tournament. They went on that season to win the state championship, which I reminded the coach of every year from then on. Remember how 10 guys went on our mission trip and you won the state championship? You ever want to do that again? Just give me a call. God has a way of seeing these things through when we follow him first. And I think that's what this whole parable is about. It's about putting God first, above everything else. And when we do that, the other things, they fall into place. Salt is good. Very biblical statement there. I like that. Salt is good. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is fit for neither the soil nor for the manure pile. It is thrown out. Whoever has ears to hear, let him hear. We begin, and Jesus tells us this in the book of Matthew, as being the salt of the earth, the light of the world. That's what we are to be as Christians. And if we are not being that salt and that light, we are not living out what God has created us to do. And this morning, you look around our world and you may think to yourself, it's a pretty dark world we live in. Sure, a lot of people out there claiming to be Christians for it to be a dark world. I mean, if we're the light, if we're the salt, shouldn't this be a pretty salty, lighted place? There's a lot of us out there, and I would submit to you it's because we're not doing this every day all the time. Now, some of us are, and some of us could be a great example to others of us as to how to do this. But for a lot of us, it's this hour. We've got the right answers, we know the right things, we do the right things for this hour, and then we carry on with life. That is not counting the cost, that is not carrying the cross, that is not completing our tower, that is not being salt. And this morning, if you feel like that describes you, don't leave here letting it continue to describe you. Don't continue to be not light. Don't continue to be not salty, because those things are not what God made you to be. And those things are not what he made me to be. This morning, if you have not counted the cost before, because of a lot of us somewhere way back when, decades ago, someone scared us about hell, and we jumped in the water, and we never really thought about what it is that we're doing, think about it today. Think about what it is that we're doing. Think about what it is to be a Christian. Think about what you look like as a neighbor if you're a Christian, what you look like as a coworker as you're a Christian, as a member of your family as you're a Christian, and how that should be different than what everybody else is doing. And then let's just start doing it. Let's start being light and salt and making our world a better place to be. And then let's not be shocked when people want to know what got into us. What made us different than we used to be? And we can tell them all about what Jesus has done in our lives. We can tell them all about coming into contact with him through baptism. We can tell them all about the fact that we have eternity to look forward to. We can tell them all about what it is to be light and salt. And hopefully they'll want to be a part of that too. This morning, if there's anything we can do for you, anything we can pray about in your life, or if you'd like to take him on, become a part of this walk and become salt, please come as we stand and sing.